and thank you guys for joining the Walt Weekly Podcast Friday Night Live. You're here with Walter Latham. I am your host, along with Michelle Sweeney McComb. This week's episode and the panel, at least let me not ever forget the panel, which Michelle will introduce the panel to you shortly. All right, this week's episode has to do with celebrating Black History Month 2022. And on this week's Friday Night Live, we will celebrate Black history as we look back at our leaders such as Frederick Douglass, Marcus Garvey, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, Kaepernick. Very few people mention him. Sojourner Truth, Harriet Tubman, W.E. Du Bois, Julian Bond. Can't go on and on, but we got a lot that, you know, that we can look back at these men that made a stand, men and women who made a stand, you know, to help us achieve equality in this country, which is still an uphill battle. You know, the hill has not been taken. In tonight's episode, I did mention Julian Bond, right? Can I tell y'all guys a short story? Michelle, I'm going to turn it over to you very shortly.
Yeah.
About Julian Bond. Julian Bond, I met in 72 at ECSU, Elizabeth City State University. He came to do a talk, a lecture there. And I was a freshman. And, you know, after these talks on campus, these campus speeches, you know, the speaker, afterwards, they would have like a banquet. So at the banquet, I got a chance to chat with him briefly. All right. So first thing I said to him, I said, Mr. Bond, how are you, sir? When I grow up, I want to be just like you. He said, he looked at me and he said, you don't know how I am. So it's best for you to pursue what you need to do, you know, to be accomplishing whatever you're studying or whatever, something to that effect. But I do remember him telling me, you can't be like somebody. You can't say, well, I'm going to be that guy. And if you don't know who that guy is, you got to be yourself and achieve your own goals. So I just want to throw that in with Julian Bond. I did get a chance to meet with him. And I will always remember that. All right. Now I am going to turn it over to Michelle so that we can get on with the show. Michelle?
Hey, guys, and welcome to the Walt Weekly Friday Night Live. Thank you to our live audience for always supporting us on a weekly basis. Please click and share this podcast and follow the Walt Weekly. We have our weekly panel members, Christopher Sweeney out of New Jersey. He's a retired sanitation worker and CEO of Johnny Roof's Smokehouse. We also have the Honorable Gene Edwards, male district leader out of the 79th district in the Bronx, New York. Welcome, guys. Welcome. We appreciate everybody on a Friday night coming in. We hope everyone is being safe out there.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's been a rough week and a half, I would say. And it's more to come. But yeah. Last year, we skated by, you know. So this is what we would like to accomplish in this episode. All right. All right. And what did we learn? All right. This is Black History Month. As we look back at our history, what did we learn? All right. Did we as a people rise to the occasion? Did we become relentless in our pursuits of peace, justice, and prosperity? And what about equality? Now, we believe that Black History Month should be a time that we use as a checkpoint. You know, we stop here and we're going to look back. Okay, so what did we do last year? Okay, that we can check off the list. And then what are the next steps? You know, it's always been my practice to judge people on their actions, not on their talk. If you can talk the talk, then walk the walk. I want to turn it over to the panel. I got some questions for them. They're going to chime in. It's not going to be a question answer. We're going to share with you our thoughts. And I may have some questions for the panel because they're very versed in Black history. So with that said, I am going to turn it over and find out from the panel, what does Black History Month mean to them? And I'm going to start with Chris.
Good evening, folks. So Black History Month, for me, I kind of like I used to say I didn't like to push everything into 1 month, right? Because, you know, our history is so deep and so vast in this country, and 1 month can't hold it, right? But okay. you start to embrace it a little bit more as you get older, because you try to use it as teaching moments, you know. You try to sit with your kids and, you know, talk about the people who inspired you. Because for me, that's how I look at it. I look at those who came before me as inspiration. And, you know, you sit down and you pass those stories on to your kids, as we should be. Hopefully everybody is doing that. You know, I don't know if it's being done as much as it used to be, but, you know, it's a time to, you know, really bond with your family and speak about the great people who came before you, and how you could continue their legacies and the things that they fought for, because by no means have we reached the goals that we set forth for ourselves, right? We still got a ways to go in this country. Sometimes I think, you know, we're going backwards a little bit, you know, because it seems like history is repeating itself. You know, with the voting rights, that
with these laws that they passed, right?
So it seems like we are going backwards, and I think they're able to do things like that because of the lack of interest in the fight that was had many years ago. You know, again, if we don't share those stories and we don't tell kids and the younger generation what happened and how these people made an impact by just going out there and marching and fighting and not giving up. They didn't have a lot to work with, you know what I mean? But they didn't give up and they pushed forward. So if we don't share that and it gets lost, this is how they're able to come back and reintroduce those crazy laws and try to take away our rights to do a lot of things. So I think Black History Month is very important to just share.
Okay. Jay?
If we are to look at what the intent was when Negro History Week, which became Black History Month, was given to us, or outlined by Dr. Carter G. Woodson, it was to reflect on the achievements of Black people in America. And one of the issues I've always had is that whenever I go to, you know, Black history celebration events, they always talk about, you know, the same people, you know, Dr. King,
right,
Malcolm X, right, you know, things of that nature. And, you know, they'll throw Michelle Obama, and then they'll find a way to crowbar Kamala Harrison. And clearly she's not Black. You know, her roots, her father is Jamaican and her mother is from India. That's not Black to me, but somehow they crowbar her in. When I look at Black history and what the intent was, as outlined by Dr. Carter G. Woodson, I look at Alvin Bragg being the first Black Manhattan DA. I look at Darcell Clark being the first Black woman DA in the country. I look at in the state. I believe I think she's in the country because Kamala Harris was the Attorney General. So Darcell Clark was the first black female DA in the country. And then you have Mayor Eric Adams, who was only the second Black mayor in New York City. And then you have the police commissioner, first Black woman. I want to say the first Black person, because we thought Phillip Banks was going to make it.
Right.
When he was chief of police, and he didn't get it. He had to go to Philadelphia to get that PC position. So the new PC, first Black person, first Black woman. So Black history is unfolding right before our very eyes. And in as much as it's nice to talk about Ida B. Wells and Fannie Lou Hamer, we have Black history in front of our face in the terms of Tish James, Vanessa Gibson, and Darcell Clark, and the police commissioner.
Well, that's what I wanted to say. You know, what can we point to as achievements? And not just look back, but, you know, what have we done? All right. And you just covered that base for me. We've done a lot. Okay. We still got a long ways to go, but we can point to achievements, you know, first time events and things that we need to do in retrospect as Black history, you know, turned from being from achievement driven to history driven, you know. We can look at that. But what do you think? All right, I'm asking both of you guys. What do you think about, and this is something that's current, all right, with this Brian Flores coaching thing with the Giants? I hate to jump off point quick, but before I forget, I did want to speak a little bit about that and try to solicit some information from y'all guys, what y'all guys thought about that.
That's not jumping off. That's part of where we are today. You know, it's important. He's brave in what he did. I mean, you know, this guy is a young guy, you know, and he put his career on the line, but he felt moved, you know, he felt so moved to do it, and he felt used and disrespected, and he had to stand up. So I applaud him. You know,
yes.
You know, he's much like Colin Kaepernick. You know, hopefully more people will stand behind him. You know, he's Brooklyn bred brother. You know, it's good to see him. And you know, the Giants was his dream job. You know, you born and raised in Brooklyn. You know, you brought up in Brooklyn, New York, and Brownsville, and you get an opportunity to possibly coach for the Giants. You know, he was excited for that. And they took that away from him. They used him. So, you know, I don't blame him for coming forward. And it's very important that, you know, that good old boy system there, which is the NFL, needs to be broken. We can't even get an owner.
No, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I'm very upset, but it was about time. I mean, you know, if you look at the hierarchy and you look at in the NFL especially, if you look at them, I mean, you got what, 70-80% of the players are Black?
75%.
Right. And then you got one Black coach, I believe. All right, 32 teams, one Black coach. You know, I mean, what's that?
And he had to be exceptional, that one Black coach. He hasn't had a losing season since he's been there. Otherwise, he might not be there.
Exactly. Now, this guy, going back to Brian, I mean, he was 10 years under the with the Patriots. Okay. And you got Belichick there. I mean, the guy was good. He was 3 years coach at Miami. All right, with the Dolphins. And he had winning seasons. Yet and still, he was let go. Yep.
And Walt, I don't think Belichick made a mistake sending him that text. Personally, I think he was giving him a heads up. Hey, like you get,
you never know. That's right. That's right. You never know.
You know, he did work for him. Yeah, he did work for him.
That's right. Before, you know what? 2-3 days before they made the announcement, they were taking this other guy from Buffalo, I believe.
Right. Well, right. 3 days before his interview. He didn't even interview yet, and they had already said that, you know, Belichick said they gave him the job, and Belichick texted him. Like, I don't think Belichick is making that mistake. He's too intelligent. You know, he's been around a long time. He's not making that mistake. He purposely, in my opinion, gave him a heads up. Like, you're getting a shaft here.
Well, you know how it is. I mean, you know, these teams have to go through, when they interview for a coaching position, they have to have interview X amount of minority coaches, right?
Yeah, the Rooney.
So he was just part of the quota, you know, just to meet the quota. But I'm going to turn it over to Gene. Gene, what's your thoughts on this?
Well, first of all, he should have never been fired from the Dolphins because last season he took them to the playoffs with a rookie quarterback. And
Tagovailoa or something like
Tua.
He took them to the playoffs, right? And right. This year, Tua, I think he hurt his ankle or his hand. Anyway, he was out for like 5 games, and the whole time he was out, they lost. And as soon as he came back, they won, but they didn't win enough games to make the playoffs. They were mathematically disqualified because of their record. So no one took into account that, you know, what he can do when he has his number one quarterback in there, opposed to the struggle that most coaches have when they have to go with their number two or number three quarterback. That was evident,
right?
With the Giants this year, even with the Jets, you know, Zach Wilson got hurt for a few games, and you know they had to play, you know, musical chairs at quarterback. But that coach didn't lose his job, so he should have never been fired from the Miami Dolphins in the first place. As far as the Rooney Rule, the Rooney Rule was instituted by the Rooney family, which owns the Pittsburgh Steelers, and that's
which
why
has the only black coach.
Right, and that's why you they've had Coach Tomlin for almost a decade, if not over a decade.
No, more than that. 15 years.
Okay, yeah, but they were the ones that.
Let's also put into context that Flores, this past year, the end of the season, the Miami Dolphins were the hottest team in the NFL. They won 7 in a row. So even though they didn't make the playoffs, they finished on a high note. And the last two seasons, they've had a winning record. Before that, they've gone probably a decade without a winning record. They were a mess of a team. And let's not forget that he is accusing the owner of the Dolphins of trying to make him lose games on purpose. So, which he refused to do because.
So he can pick higher in the draft? Why would he do that?
So they could get higher draft picks. He offered him $100,000 for every loss. That's what he said. So, but I understood why Flores, one, he has integrity, and two, he also knows had he took him up on that offer and they lost miserably and they got all those draft picks, they would have fired him, brought in a white coach and said how terrible he was. But nobody else would know that the team and the owner were colluding to lose. And he would never get another job again. So he had to think about his future. That's why he said, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to win. He kind of bucked that owner, which the owner is denying it right now, but I believe him.
Well, let's see what happens. I hope he's not the only one because there's some good, you know, assistant coaches that should be, you know, head coaches out there, all right, on the defensive and offensive side. So let's see what happens with him. Hopefully there are more assistant coaches that are waiting in line for the opportunity that have interviewed or will be interviewed. There should be, I mean, it's right in front of your face. God knows. You know, like, dang. Same with the NCAA.
The coach for the Tampa Bay, the offensive coordinator who won the Super Bowl last year, Leftwich, was black. The year before with Kansas City, Bieniemy is black, offensive coordinators. So these guys are in position and they're winning. There's no excuse for it.
All right.
And they're just getting passed over and they keep recycling the same white coaches over and over.
Yeah. They can have a losing season. They move right on to some. So it's an old, you know, the old boys club, you know. Gene, you have anything you want to add?
Oh, I don't have anything to add other than wherever there's smoke, there's fire. So, you know, we got to just pay attention to this story. That's all.
You wrapped it up. That wraps it up. Yeah.
But I will say this. Coach Hugh Jackson, who is now the head coach of the of Grambling at Grambling University down there in Louisiana, and I've driven through the area, and there's not much happening. And to think that he coached, you know, he coached the Raiders and he coached the Browns. I'm sure he's itching to get back into the NFL, but immediately he came and spoke out against Coach Flores, you know, and I'm like, Hugh, nobody asked you. Nobody asked you. But, you know, it's always, you know, the dominant society always finds a coon to come and speak out when a brother brings an issue to the table when it comes to suspected white supremacy. They go and find him a coon. In this case, it was Jackson, because you notice Mike Tomlin hasn't said anything, or any other former black head coach, and there are quite a few former black head coaches in the NFL. You know,
yeah, nobody's saying anything. Man,
like my man that used to coach the Chargers. I thought that he was dismissed too soon because he had a rookie. Quarterback and Justin Herbert, and they didn't make the playoffs because he was a rookie. But prior to that, when they had Phillip Rivers, they didn't make the playoffs. Now I'm talking about Coach Anthony Lynn. They didn't make the playoffs with Phillip Rivers, who's a veteran. But when they got the rookie, they didn't make the playoffs. Now look at this as a contrast. Anthony Lynn got fired because they didn't make the playoffs 1 year, but yeah, right. Brian Flores, because he couldn't take his rookie, couldn't take him to the playoffs, but Brian Flores' rookie took them to the playoffs. And then the 1 year he got, the quarterback got hurt, they fired him, and now he's bringing allegations, and it's a pretty much a bombshell. And, you know, this is not the first time we've heard about, you know, these unfair practices with the owners. And the first thing they did
The brothers are on a short leash, a lot of them. Raheem Morris, it's been quite a few who have gotten fired early in their tenure. And they're building something. You can't give a guy a year or two to build something. He's got to have time, which they don't give these guys at all.
No, they don't. They don't. They don't get these second, third chances. You know, for some reason, that's not the case. But
what I was talking to,
I'm sorry. Go ahead,
Gene. Off. Me and Gene were discussing this a little bit because I was having this conversation with somebody outside of our group, right? And they were telling me, well, these guys, they actually own these teams, and you really can't force them to hire anybody. And I said, that's not necessarily the case. They take a lot of taxpayer money and use it for the NFL. A lot of these stadiums are funded by taxpayer money. And we should have a say in the hiring practices that go on there. Otherwise, don't take taxpayer money to build these stadiums for these billionaires who have the money to build it for themselves.
Yeah, and a lot of time the city funds it. Consider that they're going to put a stadium, they fund it. Okay. So, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I'm very interested in the outcome of that and to see whether more of these assistant coaches, as I said earlier, you know, come to the fore. All right. And sue. You know, I think
you remember the brother who paid for all of those young men's college education.
Yeah, Smith. I would guess he
was trying to get an NFL team, and they're giving him a hard time to get in. And here's a guy that has the funding.
Well, they're giving him a hard time in what way? I already said we got too many teams already. What excuses are they giving him?
Exactly. Too many teams, or nobody's willing to sell to him. He's making no traction.
And I think he's given up on his plight to get in. So, but he All was right. in, very interested in buying a team or getting a new a team added into the league, and they, you know, pretty much shut the door on him.
All right, now I want to pivot over to you know, some of the things that Black History Month is a reminder for me. Of, you know, what we've been through, what I've been through on a personal level, what I've seen other people, just like with Brian, what he's going through. Okay. But I remember once I was in Africa at the time, and, you know, we just sit around when we were not doing anything and have conversations about politics, you know, world events, all this kind of stuff. And, you know, who and who's who, you know, but anyway, this African guy, all right, the native, he was a native, he was from there. So he told me that, you know, I'm a African, a Black American. Why am I so proud of the United States? You know, because the way we're mistreated and this and that, he went on and on and on. You know, I got, excuse my expression, I got pissed off. Because who is he to tell me about my country? Okay? And I told him, I said, look, it's our, that's my problem. That's a Black American problem. We'll deal with that. All right? It's not a perfect world, but we will deal with it internally. You don't have to talk about it. Don't talk about the United States. Believe it or not, that was like 20-some years ago, and I told this guy that. Will I tell him the same thing now? Yeah. It's a problem that we have to fix. Okay? That's an internal problem. And I'll tell anybody that. Now, what are your guys' thoughts on that?
Wait a minute. This guy was from where?
I was in his town in Freetown, Sierra Leone. And we were having a discussion, and we were talking about things in general. And just by chance, the fact that I'm African-American, he brought it up and said that, you know, you live in the U.S. and they treat y'all guys like dogs. I mean, he said derogatory things about the United States to me. I told him, I said, you know,
well,
the
response should have been, who sold us into slavery?
Well, I mean, I didn't go there. They
have a role to play in why we're here. So,
oh, yeah, we know that. We know that. When it comes to reparations, I believe they got a role to play in that. So, certain countries. All right, but that's for another show. But I did tell him, you know, to go to hell. Don't talk about the United States. That's my country, okay? And we'll fix it internally, which we are trying to do, which we will do eventually. I don't know how long it's going to take. Maybe another 100 years before we get everything flattened down where everybody's equal. But I just like your guys' comments on that response. And it just came up during my research. So I said, yeah, let me just bring this up.
Yeah, you should have
asked them. I don't
have
a problem
about
with what you said.
Okay.
Yeah, you should have asked them some questions about the societal ills in Sierra Leone. Let's start why it's called Sierra Leone. There's nothing African about the name Sierra Leone. So how do we get there? So you could have popped his head on many levels, and I'm sure, you know, once you left the area where you were staying, it was basically a third world country, correct?
Oh, absolutely, and still is. They're worse off now than they were then.
Weren't they colonized by the French?
By the British. And a lot of the ex-slaves went there and settled that country. All right, out of Britain.
Mm.
Okay.
He was trying
to. A lot of blacks came from Britain and settled that country. Well,
yeah.
Then you don't forget, he's brainwashed too. He's brainwashed by the fact that, you know, everything they see about us over there is everybody live in New York. You know, there's no North Carolina, South Carolina, California. Everything is New York when it comes to black people. The urbanized African American.
Well, you know what though? Here's the problem with African nations and the brown Caribbean or CARICOM. Here's the issue with them. Because they weren't actually enslaved like our ancestors were, somehow they think that they're better than us, or they survived a hurricane and we could not. What they don't realize is that because their islands or the African nations were colonized, they don't realize that they were enslaved. When you are colonized, you are enslaved.
Absolutely. And
you have to subscribe to a doctrine of whatever, you know, European nation has colonized you. And they're so beyond the pale with it as far as they're thinking. They don't even realize that they were enslaved. And that's the meanest con job, because to this day, when you see the Caribbeans people coming over here and the African people coming over here, when they see a white man, they start showing their teeth and they become very nice and kind. When we see white people, we first thing we do is roll our eyes and say, what the hell is he doing here? This is our joint. What is he doing here?
Yeah, I expect you to say, you know what I expect you to say, Gene? And we put our heads down. We look down at the ground.
Yeah, like, what the hell is he doing here? We get happy, and we get disappointed, but that's the mindset of a man that's been colonized, as opposed to a man that has been enslaved and fought his way up out of slavery. The countries that were colonized, right, in the Caribbean and in Africa, they're still colonized. If they want freedom, they got to come here. They got to come here for freedom.
And listen, the largest group of people coming into the country right now are Africans, and many of them from Sierra Leone, ironically.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I love that country, as I mentioned. I wanted to retire there, but then they had the 10-year civil war, and that really killed the infrastructure, you know. But I did want to retire there. That is a beautiful place, man, you know. But I did.
What changed your thought on retiring there, Walt?
It's the medical. You know, if you get sick over there and you go in there into the hospital with a broken leg, you know, you may not come back out. You know, it's the medical facilities are very, 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 very poor. All right, a lot of people that I know that live there, when they get sick, they fly to London or they fly here.
Wow, that's crazy.
You know,
and you just said it was a beautiful country.
But it's a beautiful country. I'm talking about, I mean, the mountains, I mean, the raw materials. Oh. I mean, as I said, the ocean, I mean, come on. I mean, it's a beautiful place to retire. But I do have a joke for you on that. All right. There was the president of the United States, the president of France, and the president of Sierra Leone. They were flying over the globe at night. All right. So the president of the United States, once they were flying over the U.S., said, oh, man, look at that. You can see Statue of Liberty over there. You see the lights? All right. See the Empire State Building, blah, blah, blah. Okay. And then the president of France, when they flew over France, he chimed in, hey, yeah, you see the Champs-Élysées, whatever. You see the tower. You see all this. See that all lit up. It's beautiful, isn't it? All right. Then the president of Sierra Leone. They're flying over Sierra Leone. So one of the presidents said to the Sierra Leone president, I don't see anything. It's dark. He said, yeah, that's Sierra Leone. It's dark. We don't have electricity. Mm. Y'all guys get that? No light.
Yeah, we got it, Walt.
Yeah, no light, man. So that was one of the things. Another reason I didn't, you have to have a generator to live there, but, you know, I'm off topic a little bit, but I figured I'd share that with you. That's a joke, you know, one famous joke that I got pulled out of Sierra Leone.
But back to what the topic's about. We have a lot of senior leadership in place in New York City and New York State, and these seats are being held by Black people. How do you feel about that?
How do I feel about that?
Yeah, you and Chris, how you feel about it?
Okay, I think having interacted with a few of those leaders, I think it's a great thing. It's fantastic. You know, I worked in the city all my adult life, and I know how it was, Giuliani. I know I was under what's the tall guy name? You know, when you get my age, your name just go. But anyway, I've seen New York change, and it's changed in terms of leadership positions in politics and on the political spectrum. It's changed significantly, and I love what I'm seeing.
Well, did that answer you? I'm at a wait and see point. We do have a lot of progressives and minorities in places in this city, and we've been here before, you know, with Dinkins and a few other people. You know, a lot of times you don't see the work that's done by them, especially Dinkins. You know, Giuliani took a lot of credit for a lot of things that Dinkins did. I think Dinkins had a problem with messaging as well. But right. you don't see the work that he laid out until he's gone. And he was a one-term mayor. He didn't get a chance to come back and complete the jobs that he did. But, you know, he did a lot of good things. So I'm hopeful that, you know, they could take us in a new direction. But I hope that it's done with better, new thoughts. You know, sometimes you got to go outside the box to get things done. And hopefully that they will do that. They'll prove that they're smart enough, they're bright enough to get the job done and to come up with new ideas and to do it in a way that, you know, doesn't hurt the people that, you know, have been suffering in this city. You know, a lot of people are hurting in New York. A lot of people, especially African Americans, are leaving New York because it's too expensive. So maybe these people in place will make it a place where the people that actually work here and run the city and make the city move can afford to stay here. So I'm hopeful of that.
Okay. Well, I agree with that. You know, the gentrification plus the pandemic causing prices to rise and things like that. So, of course, people are going to leave New York. Very expensive place to live, you know, and it's a shame. But hopefully under Eric Adams and the people that we have in place now, hopefully something can be done about it. But that's going to take a long time. So what do you think, Gene, as one of the politicians?
Well, I think Eric Adams has had one of the toughest first months in office between all these fires and these shootings. And I think the fact that he had the cachet to bring in the governor and the president of the United States, and I could see a better, you know, alliance with Mayor Adams as opposed to what we had under Cuomo, de Blasio, and Trump. Those three were always at odds. And we can never get anything done. So like Chris said, I'm going to take a wait and see approach, but I do like the alliance that our mayor has with the governor and the president of the United States.
Okay. So we'll take a wait and see. Go ahead, Chris.
I was going to say, I like the fact that he, you know, me and Gene were discussing this earlier. He's not afraid to tap into the friendships and the former leaders as well. You know, he's reaching back, trying to find out what went on to move forward. So I like that in him. He's not afraid to sit down. You know, they made a big deal about him having dinner with Cuomo, you know, but he has a relationship with Cuomo, you know, and he said, I want to sit down with this guy because there's things that I want to do and there's things that he knows that I need to know. So he wasn't afraid. He knew he was going to take a little heat for having that dinner. I like the fact that he had it anyway. He wasn't afraid. He was ready for the questions, and he took it on. So, you know, I'm optimistic with Adams. We'll see.
Yeah, I'm optimistic. He's been hit hard. Every day he has, you know, wherein Trump had tweets he did every day. Eric Adams has funerals or going to the hospital. You know, he has so many problems. And yeah, he's the hardest. He has the hardest job. I think, in the U.S. right now, because he just took over and he got all of this in front of him, along with the pandemic, of course. And now, doing research for this show, I came across something that I used to play a lot of golf down in Myrtle Beach and Hilton Head, South Carolina. And it said that the plantation, you know, these big houses, you know, two levels and wide verandas and stuff like that. The plantation was basically a forced labor camp for slaves. So when you look at them, and it was built that way so that they could watch over the slaves to make sure that they were productive, and they wanted to make sure that they were efficient. And if they couldn't meet the goals that were set for them, all right, how do you incentivize a slave? You beat them.
You starve them.
Exactly, Chris. You whoop them. You said how long they can work during the day. And that started the ledger system that we use in accounting. All right. It started the metrics that we use, performance objectives that we use, that we keep track of. All of those metrics are based on what they used to do during the slavery times. Thomas Jefferson, believe it or not, used his slaves to fund the house that he built. Okay? And the slaves were the collateral. They were the collateral. He went to the bank, he got the money, using them as collateral, then he made them build the house. That's why they removed it. I mean, to look back at it, it's just amazing. If you look back at history and you see these things that were done.
That's why that war was fought, because of the slaves with their wealth.
They were the most wealthy asset you could have.
Yeah, and they didn't want to let go.
They were the most wealthy asset you could have. They used to take mortgages out to buy slaves. Where mortgages came from? Came from slavery. They used to take a mortgage to buy a slave and pay it back. And then you had a subprime crash, because the overpricing of slaves, and then they couldn't afford to pay back the mortgages that they took to buy the slave. Then you had a crash like we had in the Great Recession with the housing market. So I didn't know that, you know, going back and looking at it, and I see all these things. Yeah, what is capitalism? You know, I've always bragged the fact that I'm a capitalist. But capitalism was based on slavery. That's where capitalism comes in. That's where it came from.
That's how New York Life Insurance made their money back
then. J.P. Morgan Chase?
Yeah, New York Life, they used to put insurance policies on all the slaves coming in to America.
Oh, yeah.
Like, basically, Lloyd's of London used to insure the ships and the cargo, but once the ships touched stateside, it was New York Life that was down there selling insurance policies, and they were selling anywhere from 30 to 50 insurance policies per day. You know, that's how they made their money. Meanwhile,
amazing.
They were a New York-based company, right?
Right.
And that's how they got started selling life insurance on enslaved here in New York. But once slavery was abolished in New York, that's when they started traveling down to Virginia and the Carolinas and Georgia selling insurance policies. Yeah. And, you know, it was a damn shame when I came across this information, because my life insurance policy is with New York Life. And I'm like, damn, they still...
Yeah, nothing you can do about it.
They still putting insurance on black folks. Huh?
That's right. But look, don't forget about J.P. Morgan Chase and Lehman Brothers. Even though Lehman's gone now. But these banks that were existing, they made money. Because don't forget, you know, you put together and bundle these mortgages, which were on slaves, and you would sell them on the market, you know, for interest. All right. So that's why they had a crash similar to the Great Recession. All right. Because the buyers couldn't pay the mortgage off. So the thing went bust. Okay. So, you know, that was amazing to me, but you'll be able to find that out. All right. So, Yeah, going back to research this thing helped me a lot to try to, and I can see things not with more clarity, because I look back, but I deal with the now and the future. And, you know, I just want to tell the audience, you know, it's great that we got Black History Month, and we should pass it on to our kids. We should do it throughout the year. Make sure that you pass on our history. Okay. But look at the future. Don't be deterred by the color of your skin. Never let that get in the way of you advancing and accomplishing your goals. Okay. Push forward. Always push forward. As I said in our show last week, we got the millennial series that we're doing now. We started out with an author, lawyer, Howard Allen. That was last week's show. And coming up on that series, we're going to have Captain Javon Willis, West Point graduate. He will be here on the 11th, and that's a Friday. We also, to pivot back a little bit, all right, we will start having Monday nights or Monday evening shows at 6 p.m. That we're going to use as an add-on. We want to try to make a determination as to what the best night is. You know, Friday night's a busy night for a lot of people, even though this goes out to the podcast platforms, and that's where we get a lot of action, you know. But we love our live shows. We love people to participate. But you guys know that you can always catch us after 3 p.m. on Sunday on, you know, Apple or wherever you get your podcast. All right. But we're going to do a test. So we do have a show coming up Monday night at 6 p.m. It's going to be with Dina Ramsey. And she's a businesswoman out of North Carolina. I mean, she runs a mental health care facility. She has children facilities. She's scattered throughout North Carolina and Virginia. She didn't leave. She didn't leave North Carolina like I did. I couldn't wait. When I turned 16, I was on a trailway, Greyhound, on the way to New York City. But she didn't leave, and I'm very proud to have her on the show to give us some insight into what's going on in North Carolina. So that's this coming Monday, y'all. All right, at 6 o'clock. And maybe we'll christen it the Monday. Nah, I'm saying it's Monday. We got this new show that we're going to be pushing out starting this Monday. What was your name? What should we name the topic? We moved off the topic a little bit.
I don't know. Monday Hot Topics?
But anyway, I just want to get that in before I forget, because I don't have Michelle with me. So you got to bear along with me, because normally she would do this part. But as we do a wrap on this show, I want to go to Gene. Gene, do you have anything that you want to share with the audience about Black History Month, which is our core topic today?
Yes, I believe that Black History is a constant, in that we're continuing to make Black History every day. You know, I mentioned all the elected officials. Many are first time in their respective positions. And, you know, that's Black history and all the accomplishments. And, you know, I just want Black people to know that when we attain things that we fight for, that's a victory. And when we're given things by the dominant society that we did not fight for nor ask for, like the Juneteenth being a state and federal holiday, we didn't ask for that. What Black people asked for were reparations, okay? So until we receive reparations and truly make the ultimate Black history, I still think we're chasing our tails, and we're just doing things that basically provide us with a symbolic victory as opposed to a victory. And with that, I'll digress.
Thank you, Gene. Chris?
Well, I want to just say, I'll piggyback a little bit on Gene. Black history is not Black history. It's not separate from American history. It's a part of American history. this is our country just as much as anybody else's. We built it. We've everything that's great about it, we have been a part of it. And that's our legacy. That's our history. American history is part of that. And, you know, I hate when, you know, they try to, you know, it's, oh, Black history, give us a little corner as if we are not part of this society. We are part of it. We are a big part of this society. We make it run. We make everything tick. So I want people to look at it in that way. Like, this is American history. This is part of the fabric of what America is, Black history. And we should be proud of that. And also, I just want to mention, you know, there's a good documentary on HBO. One of my heroes, Muhammad Ali, is called What's My Name? It's a two-part
series. Oh, yeah, I was watching that, yes.
And it is fantastic, man. That man was so amazing. This guy was, you know, meeting world leaders all over the place. I mean, he was more than a boxer, man. He was just larger-than-life figure, man. And people should really let their kids watch that, man. It's a great piece.
That's on PBS, right?
I watched it on HBO. It's on HBO Max right now, so you could probably get it on PBS, but yeah, HBO Max PBS. Is running
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah. Good, good, good. All right. So with that said, you know, everything is now. Do not be deterred. Be relentless. And we're going to end the show with this, letting y'all guys know how you can reach us. First, I want to talk about The Walt Weekly website, which is www.thewaltweekly.com. All right. I want y'all guys, if you could, visit the site, take a look at it, see how you like it. But first, on the laptop or PC version, you're going to see the sign in, which is just your name and your email address so that you can get notifications on current events. That will be at the bottom, okay, on your workstation. But on your phone, all right, on the mobile version, the sign-in will be at the top of the screen. All right. But then if you click on podcast, you can listen to our podcast right on the website. All right. And I also do my blogs. And whoever's in, you know, signs up, they will get the blog and they will find out what's going on with The Walt Weekly. Also on Instagram, it's The Walt Weekly. On Twitter, at The Walt Weekly. Okay, and where else are we? Well, I mean, we're everywhere, actually. On Twitter, at The Walt Weekly, I think I mentioned, Instagram, and Facebook. Okay, The Walt Weekly Podcast. All right? And don't forget, this podcast tonight will be released on Sunday at 3 p.m. So tell your friends about it. And before you leave, please follow us, please. And you can follow us in two places, all right, because we want to get out there and have some sponsors. So we need these metrics, all right? We need you to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and go on to the website and subscribe, please, and like us, all right? And with that said, y'all guys have a nice weekend, and we'll talk to you all on right. Monday, and we'll be back next Friday as usual. All right, thank you.
Peace.
All right, buddy. Stay black. Stay black.
I am trying. Okay. Peace. All right. All right. Thanks, guys. Have a good one. Thanks, everybody.